Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
QNL.
Love the show.
Aw, thanks. I think Dan was the one who was supposed to say thanks to that. Sorry for co-opting your thanks.
That's fine, Lisa.
You're a member of the show, too, Lisa. You have your rights.
That's right. That's right. It doesn't just have to be me. As much as I like me, you are quite welcome to jump in.
A composite show, archive segments from previous episodes that got cut due to time. From episode 91.
In terms of the Civilization Network, I'm excited. I think people should not disparage Facebook games because, seriously, more people play Facebook games than play what are quote-unquote real games. So, like it or not, people are going onto Facebook and playing more Facebook games, and it only makes sense for people access to move onto that platform.
Okay, but that's the same argument behind Civ Revolution. Yeah, lots of people use consoles, so we'll make a game for the consoles. But that's not the Civ that I play on my PC. It's nothing like those games. It's not a game that I enjoyed playing Civ Revolution compared to Civ 4. So I expect the exact same thing out of Civ Network, that it's going to be a drastically different game on a different platform, in this case Facebook, that I'm going to care very little about. But I'm willing to give it a go.
John Davison from GamePro was talking about Civilization Network to our class, and I think he said something really quickly about, you know, it just makes financial sense. Just look at how much money Zynga is making, even though Zynga's evil.
Oh no, they're taking Civ to where there's an audience that's currently not being served by Civ, and that is something that needs to be corrected. But like with Michael, Civilization Network really doesn't fill a gaming need for me. I don't use Facebook, and honestly, this isn't going to make me go, oh, Facebook is fine now, I'm going to try it out specifically to do that. Civilization Revolution, however, portable Civ on the go. I know there's Civilization for War of Two Cities for your cell phone, but I admit my cell phone is pretty basic, bare-bones stuff, so that doesn't interest me. Plus, Civilization for War of Two Cities is also very limited. But Civilization Revolution on the handheld Nintendo DS, that fills kind of the void for me, because, oh, I don't have my PC, I don't have a laptop, it's also a game that I can get into more quickly and get out of quickly. Yeah, I think it was more than once compared to a checkers versus chess. I'll tell you what, if a Civilization came to the Wii Fit, that could be interesting. Like, you actually have to act out the battle yourself.
That would be amazing.
Yes, jog up and down for 2 minutes to make your cavalry charge.
It's like that old Nintendo pad when they had the track and field thing.
Oh, just as a footnote, I mentioned Zynga. If people aren't aware, Zynga is a company that makes Farmville. And Mafia Wars, and all of those games that real gamers don't say are games, but they are still games,
don't worry about it. They're habits, they're games. Games have to be fun.
They're fine for lesser beings. It's all right. I mean, people have to fill their time somehow. If you're not good enough to play Civ, like, yeah, I know it's hard, so.
That's like saying a poker machine is a game. It's not a game, it's a gambling device. People are addicted to it.
I would say poker is a game. I don't think a game actually has to be fun to be a game.
It's not a sport either.
No, it's not a sport.
Yeah.
No, I mean slot machines, not poker.
Game doesn't have to be fun for it to be a game. It's like playing War, the card game, where it's really just a matter of drawing cards and seeing who wins. Completely random. I guess some people consider that a game, so... I don't play it, but... Whatever.
Yeah. See, they're still games. They're just games played by people who are not gamers.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think especially gamers tend to have a pretty strict notion of what a game actually is. Well, I could just go over to my game design textbook and read you what makes a game. But suffice it to say that Facebook games are games. It's just that people don't know it, even the people who play them. They'll say, like, I'm not a gamer, even though they play Farmville every day. And you're just like, no, yeah, you are. You are playing a game.
They're more hardcore gamers than hardcore gamers are.
Yeah, because every day, what the hell?
Yeah.
And they're on their phones playing the games constantly as well.
There you go.
I think the difference is the how they put their time into the game, because they'll just do it occasionally for a few minutes at a time, update your farm, and then go away. Update your farm. Bam, everybody. tell them to help build your farm even though nobody cares, and then go out again. I guess how some people play Civ.
Yeah, especially those pit boss games.
From episode 103.
When it comes to tile spam, Civ 4 players will have one familiar thing. There are no more cottages, but there's a certain improvement called a trading post that it also is linked to the T key on your keyboard. So if you want to move your workers around and slam T repeatedly to get gold in this game, there you go. That hasn't changed. Not everything is different, huh? Although that's not the only tile improvement strategy you can take in this game, it's pretty viable, especially given the limitation that there is on hammers in this game, and the limited ability to improve hammers on tiles, where, you know, you really can only do that on hill tiles or special resource tiles. Whereas trading posts, you can put almost anywhere, so you can add a lot of gold potential to a city. And since you can rush buy things from turn one, and you can abuse city states, or, you know, research agreements, or whatever you want, you can have quite a field day with gold. So it's not bad to have trading posts.
They're actually a good use for jungle tiles, especially because later on you also get science out of those tiles.
Yes, from the universities.
Yeah, kind of those tiles that are like, does it have any resource on it? No. Can I mine that? No. Is that a good farm spot? No. Oh, trading post.
Although it's hard now when it comes to growth, because growth is almost as much unhappiness as founding a new city. I mean, yeah, you get an extra unhappiness just for the city, but it takes longer to grow a single city to, like, 10 or 20 than it would to get 2 to 5, for example. So you get one more unhappiness for dropping another city, but you have more tile yield available to you sooner. So you have to be very careful about working certain tiles too early in the game and limiting your ability to have cities. And then you have to balance that with the social policy and culture required for it limitations as well. More cities is going to be more gold and science in this game, pretty much no matter what. But those other things can slow you down to the point where you don't get more of either in the long term. So it's a little bit iffy to balance that.
Yeah. Every time I'm starting on a new map, okay, how many cities do I need to build for me to be viable? How many is too many? How many is too little?
There's no doubt about it that depends on how you're trying to win.
From episode 106.
I really, really got unhappy that they got rid of religion in Civ 5. It totally spoiled the feel and any kind of role-playing potential for the human player, and I think that was a mistake.
We were warned about this. It's not like this is a surprise, but...
No, but it's a mistake.
The thing about it in the thread, though, if there was actual remnants of the religion thing that they were trying to implement,
right.
And they had, like, several listed, and they didn't have Judaism on there, but they had, like...
No, they didn't.
Polytheism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Shinto, that was another one, and...
And they had Zoroastrianism as well, which I thought was strange. You have to be fairly educated to know what the hell Zoroastrianism even is.
I agree with several posters that did say that this will most likely be the expansion pack.
Right.
Maybe even the first one, and that they need to balance it.
Probably. I bet they thought about putting it in and saying no, and could have put it in the original. Really, but let's look at it. There's nothing that is in Beyond the Sword that could not have been in Vanilla Civ. So I'm sure they have some things that they plan on putting in later for expansion packs.
Actually, what I found most interesting about that forum thread was how much bashing there was of Steam.
Lots of bashing of Steam.
Because people were blaming Steam for the removal on the theory that...
Which has nothing to do with the game.
No, I'm not saying it makes sense. The basic theory these people seem to have is, well, of course they'll sell it as DLC because that's what Steam...
Which is possible.
That's not the point. Steam has nothing to do with what choices the developers do. They're just scapegoating.
I don't know there. I'm enough of a believer in conspiracy theories to say that they probably do. But
no. I don't know that Steam influences this so much as they set up a set of incentives that game developers get driven by. The fact that it's easier to sell DLC on Steam makes it more likely that a game developer will think more heavily about DLC and about what they could sell for DLC. So while I wouldn't say Steam is responsible, the fact that Steam exists, it's not Steam, it's the fact that a system like it exists, or if you were on one of the consoles, you know, the fact that you can buy DLC so easily through these things incentivizes game developers to keep throwing a stream of it out there.
And it happened to be that perhaps Infraxis decided that one of those incentives would be, okay, adding religion later.
the greatest revelation was not that, yeah, religion was removed from Civ 5, although that kind of re-sparked that debate. I mean, John Schaefer, lead designer of Civ 5, said that some time ago in many interviews, as was pointed out in this article, that it had been removed, not compatible with the new diplomatic attitude model that was being implemented in the game, quote-unquote, from Robert Plompanopoulou, who posted this article. The surprise was digging into the code, seeing the remnants, or at least some remnants, of what was being attempted, which is how we found out, for instance, in looking at the source files, that there was no Judaism as a specific religion in there, that a religious victory would be about bringing a religion to all cities, and that unit files showed that some units may actually found a religion. Trying to try that religion specifically not being in the game was Steam's fault, but that's too many degrees of separation, folks.
That could also just be what other people said in the thread. Maybe religion wasn't ready. They were looking at its integration into the game balance, and it just didn't work, and they thought, you know, we can delay the game by 6 months to a year to get religion in, or we can ship the game and then ship religion later when we figure out how to get it working with game balance.
I kind of seriously doubt that's what that was the way the thought process went, but possible. Does Firaxis get to decide when the game ships, or does 2K decide when the game ships?
Ultimately, I'm sure it's a deadline from 2K, in consultation with Firaxis.
Either way, there was a deadline that somebody imposed, and either they were going to delay the game or not ship it.
They can only delay a game so long. I mean, look at Duke Nukem. I know that there was...
Yeah. Oh, no!
Oh, my God.
That's example number one of you can delay it for as long as you want to.
I think they have lost fans because of that. I don't know that there's as much as a fan base as there used to be, but I mean they do deserve to make money, and they'll come out with downloadable content to make their games more life. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the downloadable content as a concept. I just don't think that there's this conspiracy that they said, oh, well, we have to keep this back because we need to make money. So I think James and Phil are right that there are balance issues because the game already has some to begin with.
Some, huh?
Yeah, exactly, some. So clearly they need more work. This is just going to make it worse.
And we know how tightly entwined religion was to the diplomatic system in Civ 4, so they want to find a way to incorporate that into the game, and with the balance, have it so that there is the balance, and I'm getting the sense that not try to balance it so much in terms of diplomatic relations, but just some kind of other balance, so it's another mechanism in the game that adds flavor without it being so heavy-handed, yet at the same time perhaps not be as passive as it is now, or just making it technologies in the technology tree, as you would see, say, in Civilization Revolution, or even some of the earlier Civ titles on the PC, like Civ 1 and Civ 2.
I wonder if they'll force you, if you're a certain kind of leader, to have certain kinds of relations with other leaders based on religion. Kind of like it does in real life. The reason I think of that is because you have start biases based on the civilization you pick. They actually coded that into the game.
Curious, as someone who has a different perspective, what is the main reason that things go badly in the game speed in multiplayer?
It's hard to say. I think it's a combination of user interface and the resource demands the game puts on. I'm always, always, always disappointed, at least since Civ 4, but even Civ 3 to an extent, I'd say more since Civ 4, about how much emphasis they've put on the graphical aspect of the game and how the game looks and everything to the detriment of the gameplay itself.
Wow, okay.
Much of my gripes with the Civ 4 being quote-unquote slow is that I'm waiting for the game to calculate processes, or I'm waiting for a graphics card that came out after the game was designed to catch up and allow me to friggin' move.
Interesting.
That's a problem in Civ 5, too. Like, I'll go to right-click on something, and it'll just be red, and it's like, you can't move there, but I can move there. And if I click on it again anyway, I'll move there. But every time I have to wait like that, losing out on several seconds, and if that happens every single turn, you're looking at 15, 20 minutes of waste time across an extended game, then there's just no reason for that.
Well, that gets worse and worse as the game progresses, too. I mean, in the early game,
yes,
you generally don't see that problem. The closer you get to industrialization, and it seems to me that every time I've played, it gets worse and worse the further along you go. After you've been in to the point where you have modern units, the game can often go down to a complete crawl.
Especially in Civ 4, it's bad.
Well, that's just because we need better computers. I mean...
No, every single thing in my machine is specs like that came out post-Civ 4. And it's so far above the recommended respects, it's ridiculous. But you try to play like anything larger than a standard map, and you're hitting end turn reasonably quickly. I play a lot of stuff where I'm just trying to get through the end game on huge or large, and I'm hitting end turn, and I actually spend almost as much time waiting for my next turn as I do playing the turn, sometimes more. That goes straight to their emphasis on graphics and that sort of stuff rather than gameplay and performance, and it's very frustrating to me.
Okay, well, some people mentioned that. I disagreed with that mention because I like my pretty pictures. But would you think people would still buy the game? Because the argument was that without that kind of A-plus graphics, people just would not buy it. And that was 2K's argument.
That's a tough call because most people who play are not like me. They do their graphics horrible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not advanced enough players to the point where they can even recognize some of the flaws exist. The AI will roll a random number generator and pick a resolution at random, even if it's in position to, say, win a UN victory, or even if it's in a position where it's in environmentalism and nobody else is and everyone else would be screwed by it. Nope, it just rolls a dice, and it will even pick things that have been picked previously.
Hmm.
And a lot of players don't know that. A lot of players still don't know how abusive the Apostolic Palace is quite a few years after Beyond the Sword release. So you get these things, and 2K sees this, and they're like, okay, what's going to make the typical person buy this game? And, you know, I hate to admit it because it pisses me off, but...
Well, that's capitalism.
They're going to put their attention to graphical detail and making the game seem pretty.
Right.
Rather than making it a complete game. That's how it is. If you want to sell them, you make an incomplete game and sell an incomplete game rather than the other way around.
Well, that's hardly limited to Civilization and 2K, though. I mean,
no, it's not.
No, it is not limited to Civ at all.
First-person shooters certainly are the same problem.
Yeah.
Where do they spend most of their time? On the AI in first-person shooters? On the story? Well, no.
Well, there is no, like, AI in first-person shooters. Like, campaign, sure, but...
Well, Half-Life has a little bit, but not much.
Most of the first-person shooters are designed around multiplayer aspect.
Right.
And that does change their performance because... then you don't have to worry about AI at all.
Which is why I only own 3 first-person shooters. Half-Life 1, 2, and then Serious Sam.
It could be a fun divergence, and there's a lot of strategy in shooters, but it's definitely a different game from other types of games.
It's interesting, because what I expected you to say is that everybody is having to move one unit at a time, and you have these big, huge armies where everybody's moving one unit at a time, and that just takes a forever and gets tedious, which is something that a lot of reviewers have talked about and is actually true. That is a problem. By the time you get 20 units and you're having to move those units one at a time to get anywhere, it gets really old.
The reason I didn't say this is because as an RTS player, moving 20 units at a time compared to like 150, that requires faster movements, and it just doesn't seem like much to me.
But when you do it in an RTS, do you not make boxes around them and move them all at once?
Actually, you control group them.
Right, and you can't do that in Civ. And that's one of the problems, I think.
No, you can't, but you still probably aren't microing that many more things in Civ than you are in, say, StarCraft 2. Because in addition to your army, which you probably have 2 control groups, you have a control group for your main, you have a control group for your unit production structures, and then you have all these other tertiary units that are scouting or doing this or that that aren't part of your main army, and all of a sudden you are keeping track of that many things at once. And 20 units is pretty rare. If you're microing your workers, which is probably recommended, then you might have some demand in the early game, but most of my Civ 5 turns are under 30 seconds, and the ones that aren't are like mid-war.
Wow.
Because you can give units orders to move to a distant location, and that's penalized much less badly than it was in Civ 4, where it would just not interrupt you and get itself killed. So you don't even have to give orders to units every single turn. And then they change the scale of the game such that it seems like there's less total land or something, or land takes up more room, or units take up more room, something like that, such that you don't need like 60 units any longer. You have like a front of 6, and that's it. So yeah, it's a little bit slower. That, you know, that's part of the design. And I don't think that is as big of a problem as the interface lagging behind the commands I'm giving it, or pressing enter 7 times after finishing my last command before the turn actually ends.
Okay.
Because if you're actually moving units and you're thinking about moving units and whatever, and the players are reasonably similar speed, it might take a little longer, but it's really not going to be a detraction from the experience. It's when you're sitting and doing nothing that's a detraction from the experience.
I have not had that problem, but then I don't play nearly as much multiplayer on as you do.
Well, you don't have the same play speed either, so I doubt you outplay the interface.
No, I don't. I do not.
It would be hard to use control groups with one unit per tile. It really would be.
Just circle all the units on various tiles and move them as a front. Move your army all at one time. Because you want to have everything side by side and the things behind it.
Yeah, I guess you could bind it like 1, 2, 3 and hit 1, right click, 2, right click, 3, right click, and so forth. That would be a minor improvement. But considering the problems in the game right now, I would much rather see the bugs get corrected than adding control groups as a priority.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember when Civ 4 first was coming out, this one game show reviewer was talking about how you can automate things and make things streamlined and quicker to play. And it seems like we have a phase now of the gaming industry being about fast gameplay. That's why the first-person shooters and RTSs are doing so well, and the adventure games are practically dead because they're just not fast in action and glitzy graphics.
Rather than fast, I would say I demand streamlined. I don't want it to be a chore to select, like, 30 units, because selecting 30 units and, like, unselecting one or two is really a common move in Civ games, well, at least prior to Civ 5. And yet, they made that a chore, because if you use the hotkey to select all the troops, and then you hold shift and try to unselect some troops, the hotkey that you pressed alt will glitch the game, and you can't shift to unselect troops. So you have to go through rigmarole every single time you want to move a big stack. And more so than anything else, that kind of crap pisses me off so much.
And I don't even do that. I try, even in multiplayer games, I'm still selecting troops one at a time and moving them even in Civ 4. This is why my turns are so slow, I guess. Okay.
Pairing Civ 4 and Civ 5, how Civ 5 is a more militaristic-oriented game.
By far.
And so I've also seen comparisons, and it's been brought up that if you're more single player, you're going to enjoy Civ 5 more than someone who is more multiplayer oriented.
I can't comment on that.
I don't know.
That almost sounds kind of true of Civ in general. Civilization is kind of a slow game to begin with.
Exactly.
Even when we're playing multiplayer Civ 4, it can take hours to complete a game.
Right.
Whereas if I'm playing StarCraft 2, I can get 4 or 5 games done in the time we do one Civ 4 game.
If what you did before for fun on a Saturday was go to a role-playing store and play, like, I don't know, Warhammer or something, then you would probably enjoy Civ multiplayer more. But it's for those type of people. It's for somebody who wants a game with multiple people for 12 hours.
So tactics are there, too. The tactical demands from 5 are way beyond 4.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
4 had some very rudimentary stuff, but there really wasn't much tactical strategy in war. It was just a question of numbers and attack. You had some, like you had some forking, you said naval raids, and some terrain promotions. But for the most part, Civ 4 was just a numbers game. 5 has a lot of high-end tactical strategy, and you could lose very quickly if you don't mind that. So I actually think that if you can actually finish a game in multiplayer, 5 might be a little better.
If you have the time to allocate to it.
Yeah, if you have the time. I worry about Civ 5's multiplayer because the game is very slow. Even on like quick game speed, it's slow.
Depends on what you mean by slow.
I mean it's relative to other Civ games. Civ 4, for somebody like me, I was kind of known for playing quickly, but I could complete a game on normal speed on Emperor or Immortal under 2 hours if I pushed myself a little bit.
Well, right, but you're a StarCraft player, so your notions of speed are crazy.
Okay, but sure, but this is going to apply to everybody because it takes me that long, and I'm not even halfway through the game in Civ 5.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's horrible for multiplayer, for sitting down and playing at the same time. It is awful. Because how are you going to play a game in 6 hours when one of the faster players in the game can't even get halfway done in 2? There's no way. I mean, if anybody's even remotely slower than me, you won't be able to complete a game in a day anymore. And that's problematic. Every other iteration of Civ, it's at least possible to do that.
I think it's possible, but if you're playing a game with more than like 2 or 3 people, expect to save and come back. I don't see that as a bad thing. I know you do.
I do. I see that as a design flaw. It's really alienating the multiplayer community, in my opinion. It's bad.
My opinion of the multiplayer community is that most of them need to be playing a real-time strategy. But that's just my opinion.
Well, I've kind of gone that direction, unfortunately.
If you want a RTS, go play an RTS. Don't make them destroy Civ and make it an RTS.
Well, I agree with that, too. Civ is supposed to be turn-based strategy, and it is still turn-based strategy for the most part.
But Civ 4 was not.
No, it is. There is no comparing Civ 4 with StarCraft or Warcraft 3 or anything like that, or Command & Conquer. Mm-hmm. There's just leagues difference between those two games. I know because you don't play those games a lot.
No, I hate them.
But I know this for a fact because I've played them all heavily, and it's just the difference is staggering.
Okay.
Civ 4 is still turn-based. Civ 5 is still turn-based. It's just slow. And I think part of that is the interface. It's not just the game design. The interface is slow, and it forces you to wait for some things that you probably shouldn't have to wait for.
From episode 108.
Well, speaking of gratification, we could move on to that topic about missing replays. That seems kind of sucky.
Yeah, you're not really rewarded for winning. You just, like, you won.
Yeah, I don't know. I really miss seeing the replay. And seeing your empire, like, grow from, like, this little stage to taking over the map. That was fun.
Hopefully they'll add that at some point. But there's some kind of app you can get somewhere. I haven't used it myself. It's in this thread.
It saves files that have the information, at least most of it, apparently.
Oh, so it's saving the data, but it's not turning that data into something tangible.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Somebody wrote a little app that will do it for you.
Missing the replay, not only for actually what I'm doing, but particularly coming from a multiplayer perspective and a cooperative, but maybe even if it's not cooperative, being able to see what's going on with other people, especially now, for instance, that we can't trade world maps. I mean, that was a big advantage before. Oh, there you are. There's where your cities are. There's where other people were. So now I can get kind of a general idea, maybe, of how things went. But I have, like, no idea, perhaps, what's going on. And without the replay, it also can help you in that moment. You've just finished that game. Watch the replay, not only of what you're doing, but what other people are doing. And you can think about, that was a good move. Maybe that wasn't a good move. Oh, why did that happen? Oh, right, that preceded that event. So the replay, you've got both the visual as well as the text that you had in Civilization IV to accompany it.
Yeah, it's did they just beat me to this location, or were they there for a century?
Yeah, exactly.
The spot that I wanted to settle, it's how long were they there over in the New World or wherever?
I'm looking at an example of this app that somebody wrote, and it's pretty cool. You can see, like, when people have golden ages, which you wouldn't normally know about if you hadn't met them yet, stuff like that. So you can see how early the AI will do certain things and how quickly they expand and conquest and stuff like that. When peace is declared, when war is declared.
I mean, sure, in Civilization V, there is the notification log, but...
That's so much fun to read.
Well, A, that's so much fun to read, but also, of course, that's dependent upon, in the moment, who you've actually met in the game.
Yep.
So even if it was, okay, at the end of the game, here, would you like to look at your notification log now? Besides it being, we said, just awesome to read because it's so interesting, all that text upon text upon text upon text, you're not getting the whole picture that a proper replay will give you.
They should definitely offer that in the game at some point. But in the meantime, it's nice that somebody made one.
Most and least favorite ruin bonus, and inevitably someone, I forget in this thread, I didn't even bother to write down their username because that's not what the issue is. Ruins should not be in the game, they're ridiculously overpowered. Okay, that's a completely separate discussion. Let's talk about your favorite and least favorite. I think my favorite in both theory as well as practice. I'm kind of actually torn between the culture to get a new social policy and a free technology.
I like the population, with the caveat that this is early on in the game, and I'm not finding one on an island in 1900 AD or something like that.
It screws up your unhappy cap.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, then I just raise a city, right? You're causing problems. Goodbye. Technology can be good, too, assuming it's something you want.
And assuming something you were going to just get next turn anyway. I realize it's one turn, but still,
yes.
Game, especially in Civ 5, it likes to choose the one you're already researching. Mm.
Can we put a line in the code so it checks what you're researching and doesn't pick that? Or pick something else if it picks that first?
Yeah, well, there's always the option of not stepping on a ruin when you're one turn away from finishing attack.
Then the AI might get it, though.
That's true, but if you can see far enough to see that they won't, delay getting it that turn.
I like the scout upgrading to an archer, but I don't really care for the warrior upgrading to a spearman, because I'd rather turn that warrior into a swordsman later on. It's kind of weird that the upgrade paths are totally different for ruins.
You know, having said that, in your next game, you're destined to be wiped out by horsemen.
At least it won't take 25 hours.
So, okay, least favorite. Ooh, I know, the crudely drawn map.
Yes.
Maps. In any version of Civilization, has it ever really helped to get one of these maps?
You've got the same thing in Civ 4, which would show you like a map of the ocean of just water.
Yeah.
Somebody drew this? Like,
yeah, it's the, how do these people who have no sailing manage to get these 7 disconnected tiles out in the ocean that they don't know what the tiles in between them are?
Yeah, some poor soul died creating that map and had it sent back to land by a carrier pigeon for you to find, you ungrateful bastard.
Yeah.
From episode 110.
Mackie, you mentioned a particular wonder earlier that you like.
Yeah, the longsword's wonder.
So our longsword's been the new horseman. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, is green the new red or whatever is hot in fashion these days. I don't know, I should have thought of a better analogy. But anyway.
Longsword's been the new black. Yeah, hey, longswords, are they the new horsemen? It's a topic that Swordspider started on Civ Fanatics. So he says, okay, so a quick observation here based on my SP and MP playing. It appears that after the horsemen were castrated in the last patch, the now longswordsmen have become the focus of much ire. There are clear differences, notably the requirement island and the depth in the tech tree, but with that said, it appears the first to longswordsman, who then uses them immediately, has a serious advantage, much like the first to rifles. A lot of people, especially in multiplayer, are saying they need to be nerfed too. They said he disagreed, but he figured he'd poll on it. And right now, it's at 45% the option that's winning is that they're fair, but it really sucks if you don't get iron. That's about where I am. Because you have to research into the tech tree, you kind of have to plan to beeline it if you go into them early, but if you get to ironwork and you don't get iron, it's like, well, I guess I'm going for rifles. Longswords, new horsemen or not?
Well, they don't have the mobility of horsemen, and I do miss the old horsemen a little bit, but I don't really see the need to actually, you know, make them weaker than they already are. Like, well, they're not weak, but make them weaker. I don't, like, I think one poster said, okay, I don't know where it is, but it says, you know, I don't really understand the rationale between nerfing everything. Oh yeah, for the love of God, why do people feel the need to nerf every military strategy? From Bonafide 11.
Yeah, I don't think there's any nerfing here required. I mean, one of the poll options here that's actually leading right now a little bit is they are fair, but it really sucks if you don't get iron.
Yeah, that's the balance.
Exactly. Well, suck it up. I mean, that's, you know, I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, you're going to have to change your strategy? I don't have one uber strategy. Long swordsman didn't replace what horseman did? Oh no, it was rage quit. No.
Oh, shucks, I'm going to have to play this game longer and research to rifles or musketmen? Oh no.
If you're really worried about kind of an immediate circumstance that you're not going to be able to get that far, I have been successful with, you know, early on, okay, I don't see any iron working that I have near me. It's going to be difficult for me to get any iron. I can't settle for it. It's not going to be possible to get that from a city-state for whatever reason, typically because they don't have it. Okay, why don't I start building myself some, not all, but building myself some spearmen so that I can later upgrade to pikes and also be building pikes afterwards and use those as an alternative offensive force. If you realize you're without iron, then go for that. Go for those pikemen so you can take advantage of when they can actually be powerful and add yourself maybe a great general, maybe some siege as well, but press that advantage so that even though you're without long swordsmen, you're not necessarily being screwed until now I've got to race myself to musketmen or riflemen. I mean, it all depends on the situation, of course, but that's what I do. And I actually like that challenge, which is, oh, right, I can't just go down this particular path. I'm now going to have to do this instead. And so, to me, there's absolutely nothing that needs to be nerfed. It's a strong strategy, but I don't think long swordsmen are the new horsemen, because if you, in fact, don't have that iron, then there is some other path that you need to go down. And there is a viable one, relatively at about the same time, too, that she can go for.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite understand the point that Tahira made. It says, when Sora said in his analysis, it is not good to penalize everything in the game. If something feels overpowered, rather buff others than nerf one unit. In my opinion, it would have been better to boost all other units and possibly Sui's too, so that they would have been on the same level enforcement, even though the effect would have still been pretty much the same. I don't know if I understand the point of that, just because... He says himself that it's like pretty much the same, so people like bigger numbers, or...
What made horses kind of unique is that their base strength was a little high for the era. They were stronger than swords. They were available very early in the game, and their mobility was just crazy. And with the bonuses that were available just for fighting in flatlands and all the bonuses for honor and everything, you could get horsemen to the point where they could easily insta-give, like, muskets or cannons. So you had a fighting force that was good for, like, 60-70% of the game available to you within the opening turns, and they just got stronger and stronger as you fought more battles. But nerfing their hits to cities really makes it harder to just mop the entire game with horsemen units. They're still very good, though, just because of their mobility and their ability to move after attacking and move further.
I don't really think that it's a good idea for Frost to change the game further. Just because some people are doing well with the game is not necessarily going to change it.
Yeah, Phil kind of mentioned about, you know, initially how horsemen's strength was just that little higher. It was 12, and they moved that down to 10, in addition to the nerfing against the city. So to me, when we're talking about our new longswordsman, the new horsemen, it's in terms of the context, in terms of actually attacking cities. Horsemen are still have a very good purpose, not only also because of their mobility, but still with their strength. I mean, if you're getting an invasion earlier on of swordsmen, for example, or any other kind of melee or siege or...
they're very good at sniping.
Yes, exactly. And because they can move in and then move out again, that's very impressive. Obviously, you need to be using those moves accordingly. I do like King Corsus' comments, where he's like, riflemen say no.
No, once they start getting into the city-states, start getting into musketmen and riflemen, then those long swords are not that strong. Because by that time, their city strength has also gone up into like 30s or at least low or mid-20s. It's painful.
Yeah, hopefully you've got those, if you're going down the right, I shouldn't say the right promotion line, but an advantageous promotion line to make them stronger, then you can upgrade those later on down the road, you know, into riflemen as well. That's going to give you that extra advantage where you could actually have, as a result of particular combat, even if you're not able to completely destroy a civ, and I think even I fall into this trap of, oh, I need to build up my army until I can completely wipe this person out. And I didn't even used to have to think about that, because you could just do it so often with horsemen without even thinking about it. But now, be specific about, okay, what cities are closest to me, which ones are a particular advantage, you know, and then you get into questions of, do I keep it, do I raise it, if I keep it, do I puppet it, blah, 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 blah. But as a result of that combat, you can set yourself up, if you're going, you know, actually taking some promotions, if you're then pushing yourself to riflemen, you realize I need to get to riflemen to finish it off, then you're going to need, arguably, actually, probably, maybe, a few less units, whatever percentage it happens to be, because they're not just your base long swordsman anymore as a result of your earlier combat. So it can end up being a win-win rather than a complete all-out. You do a little progress and then you stop, you've crippled them, you're able to get that much farther down the technology tree that you want, they're less likely to be able to respond, and then you complete that push or go on to the next wave, whatever it happens to be.
Yes, you come out with a new and improved Carpet of Doom of musketmen and rifles.
Carpet of Doom.
Now, I was wondering that the poster Bosca said, which was, you know, long swords are fine, but it's the fate of iron deposits that's the problem, because he says that it's not random, and it's always placed opposite your capital on the map or in wildly inaccessible places, your stuff isn't fine. I don't know if I've ever seen that before, but maybe I just play it too low a level. I play it like 80 King or a little
bit above. It's really random, and he's getting the bad end of the random stick, because I've had it be in my capital. So,
Yeah.
I've had it be in the capital, I've had it be nearby. Oh gosh, I had a game the other day where I had a spot that I could settle that had 2 6 iron.
Yeah.
It was like, holy crap.
Longswords are not that great if you don't have iron.
Yeah, as you won't be able to have them, you won't be able to have the swordsmen before them. But as I said before, it's not the end of the world. I mean, yes, long swordsmen, if you can get them, if you can settle for them, great. Maybe there's even a situation where perhaps if you're really lucky and you've got some spears and horsemen, and maybe you're actually able to take out a weaker civ in that moment that actually has iron. But more often than not, it's like, okay, I need these pikemen to be my offensive force so I can go and capture that iron, or at the very least just go and eliminate this civilization so that I can get that much farther ahead down to riflemen. And yes, I know a lot of this context is in the basis of not just being able to defend yourself, but to actually go on the offensive towards a particular military victory condition. But still, it's not the end of the world. There are options, other than rage quit.
That's always an option.
It's entertaining, I'll give you that, but...
In this case, there are other options as well than rage quit.
Yes. Yes, you can go complain on forums and... oh, wait. What? Did I say that out loud? All hate mail.
It's time for voice people to make those kind of comments, Dan.
No, but I hope for the person who started this thread. Even I was initially frustrated by this change, and I had to stop, and I had to start looking at my other option. I was like, oh, yes, pikemen. Oh, but then they're going to be, you know, they're just as slow as long swordsmen. They're not quite as powerful. Okay, so I'm going to need a few more of them. But hey, pikemen are not tied to a specific resource. If you have that technology, away you go, just like with spearmen. So to me, I would be more inclined to join you if, in addition to iron being required for long swordsmen, that was also required for pikes. 2K and Firaxis, please don't do that.
I think one issue that this whole thing touches on is that there's going to be a most powerful unit, and if you decrease its power, then another unit will be the most powerful. So it's like trying to combat the number one cause of death. I mean, there's always going to be a number one cause of death. It's just... The question is, for the strongest unit, is how much stronger is it than all the other options? Like, does it mean that anything but going for that unit is suicide? And
the answer to that for swords is no. Long swords is no. You get planks plus cities. It gets really hard for the long swords to actually take the cities. You start involving crossbows or other things, and all of a sudden, it's pretty dicey to just try to capture a city with long swords against somebody who's actually competent at defending. And sure, it'll probably work against AI, but you know, lots of things work against AI. That's kind of beside the point.
Including bait workers.
Yes, including bait workers. That consistently works against AI across multiple games.
Civ's red shirts. Except they don't die. Someone mentioned the word exploit.
What?
Something about research agreement exploits? Wow.
Aw, don't nerf that. Those are fun.
It kind of has been.
You know, when I saw the RA exploit question thread, I first thought, this is outdated. But then when I started reading it, I thought, oh, you're talking about that exploit, but wait a minute, that's not actually an exploit to me. And I think that's generally been the consensus in this thread. Started by Snaresberry. Imagine that on turn 70 of a game, you sign a research agreement. You're playing a fairly peaceful game and are teching through the top part of the tree. What you really want to do is get off the stinky continent and go out into the world and find some new trading partners. Yeah, astronomy, that's what you want. You eye it up, it's an expensive tech, you set optics, a compass to research, and on the turn compass finishes, you get a notification to choose research. Your choices are horseback riding in 4 and astronomy in 29. Yes, I know this is quite contrived. Out of the corner of your eye, you see that it's turn 98. Horseback riding is of utterly no use to you in the situation you were in. You wouldn't even care if you never researched it all game. It's astronomy you want. If you can see that this is not exploitive, then you have to think harder about what this means. This is purposely researching or even part researching a tech that you do not want in order to receive a tech that you do want from a research agreement. I think the entire research agreement system is poorly designed, and I would be happy to look at ideas for alternatives if someone comes up with one, but we have to play the game as it is. I can't make myself not know that an RA is going to expire in 5 turns, quote unquote. Yes, you are purposely researching or partly researching a tech that you do not want. This is a good idea. This is the game giving you a choice. You know what it is, what you want, what's a benefit to you, and you are choosing the best choice. This is open to human players, AI players, so why is this an exploit?
It isn't. Or if you want, everything's an exploit, because people love calling everything an exploit. So, okay, and you know, one definition of exploit is to simply take advantage of what you have available to you, you know. So if you want to go with the more positive definition of exploit, then everything's an exploit, but otherwise people bellyache over these things way too often. And, you know, if it's a good strategy, you do it. If it's not, then you don't. And if it's in the game and you don't take advantage of it, then you're playing badly on purpose. And the only reason you would do that is if you're either looking for some kind of challenge or you're just looking for flavor. But otherwise, there's really no argument for not doing things like that.
Yeah. In his example of where you have the 29 turns for astronomy and it's like the 4 turns for horseback grinding, well, you do the 4 turns for horseback grinding just to get it out of the way. I always go back and backfill text that I've skipped over, especially around the time I start doing research agreements, because I don't want to spend 25 turns to get something that's only going to take me 2 or 4 turns to research. Is that exploit or being efficient?
Yeah, his actual particular example and context does him a disservice as compared to perhaps two other technologies that are a little more comparable in terms of beaker costs and then having to actually make a choice. But
well, okay, say you have the 29 turn astronomy and then, I don't know, whatever, you have 2 or 3 other techs that are 10 or 12 turns. It's still probably better for you to pick up those 10 or 12 turn techs. While you're waiting for this agreement, you might get the other one that you didn't manage to research, but you still might get astronomy.
It actually helps give you some control. It's not complete control, but actually some control in terms of how the research agreement itself is going to be playing out. So I don't want that removed. I don't think we need to change it in any way. Some people talked about, you know, it just being, you know, a completely random thing. I don't think that we have an issue here.
I don't know. I don't like random chance elements in game, and this one kind of is, to an extent. And or you can steer it, but it's never going to be perfect, I guess. Now, I would like to see it reworked, but I really don't know how that would make it better, and that's the problem. You know, if there were an answer, if there was a better way to do it that we could think of, then I would do it. But you know, if you switch it to being totally random, then somebody can play exactly the same quality and come out ahead, and that bothers me even worse than being able to steer which technology you get. I guess if you really wanted to make things fair and keep people from gaming the system or whatever, you could just make it so you could select the tech, but then reduce the cost of research agreements or something, just balance it out a bit. That's really the only alternative I could think of that would be actually viable.
Yeah, I think, you know, replacing random chance with an actual choice, it would make it more interesting for the player. But I think the point he was making in how it's exploited it is that developers intended it to be random. But there are easy ways to choose which tech you're going to get. So the definition of exploit here would have to do with getting into issues of developer's intent.
I love how all these people have this knowledge of developer intent. That's really entertaining.
Oh yes, it's
it's just like the law. What did the legislators really intend? Let's figure out what that is and then rule that way.
I don't know. I mean, they didn't tell me. Why would someone else on the forum know the intent?
Yeah, but you can never truly know someone's intent.
Yeah, and you'd have to imagine that they're aware of it, especially considering that they've changed the rules on it a little bit. You need to invest more beakers into a tech before it's not really eligible for the research agreement. Whereas before, even like one turn of research into the tech would block it from being picked as the research agreement tech.
Well, that sounds to me like they're trying to, like the developers think it should be a random choice, or think the tech that you get should be random.
Well, they could have made it random then, certainly, but they didn't do that. And now you have like a legitimate, like say you have 5 techs that you can research. Well, now to get your selected technology, you have to blow 5 turns of research that could have gone into something you really wanted, just to steer your technology. And, you know, the more that goes up, the more research you would have to put into things that don't give you returns right away, because you're partially researching a tech and not completing it. And any time you do that, you're pretty much guaranteeing that you're not going to get anything from that technology until you do complete it. So you're blowing beakers to get something more important. And usually the research agreement makes that worth it.
Countermeasure to, you know, researching a little bit into a tech to prevent it from being one of the techs you could get from a research agreement. That is a way of avoiding bad randomness.
But it could also be construed as simply a method of making it more costly to steer your tech, because it certainly did.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they didn't want you to be able to see your tech at all. It does not. You know, you cannot actually conclude that.
I see your point.
In the chat, Lemon Lamp, I said that properly. Yes, say it several times fast. I don't know. I think they wanted to have it random, but avoid the frustration of having the research agreement give you something you're already researching. I would like that control to help steer it. But I think there's also in the chat, if people you're listening to this afterwards and you're obviously not able to see the chat, is some good discussion going back and forth with regards to the system and whether or not we're supposed to know what the system is. And I think it's not so much of a question of whether we're supposed to know, but whether we want to know. And sometimes we're given direct information, and other times we're not given direct information. In other words, yes, you can figure out how the system works, but you need to go and digging into the XML file and then tinkering around with, do I really understand that this is what the code does? You mess around with it a little bit. If you want to know, then you can know. And if you don't want to know, then you can just leave it be.
From episode 120.
Yeah, I militarily wise, I'm just not challenged. Even at Emperor level, they have three times the number of units. And what can I say? I used to play the Panzergeneral, you know that one? Panzer General?
Yep.
The old one, yeah, the one that they got the one unit per tile from. And I took over Britain with Germany and the authorities. So, you know, I consider myself a bit of an expert on the one unit per tile kind of strategy games. But that's not why I play Civ. You know, I don't play it for the tactical warfare. I play it for the building and the developing my Civ and, you know, watching my little minions grow and do their thing. And then occasionally fighting a war when it's in my nation's interests from the basis of realpolitik and stuff like that. But fighting it as a war game to me is, that's how I used to play Civ 1, because I wasn't old enough to understand the whole concept of changing governments and building, you know, or balancing the budget and stuff like that. I was a bit too young to play it, but we played it anyway. We thought it was a war game. And, you know, we built armies of chariots and took over the entire world. And then the Aztecs from across the sea came with tanks and killed us. But that's how we played it in the olden days, because we didn't know how to develop a Civ, right? And then Civ 2 came and we understood the thing about building buildings and developing. And it was awesome. And that's really how I got hooked on the whole thing. But now at Civ 5, I feel that they've made it too much of a war game. It's too focused, as Dan, you know, likes, you know, on expanding and building those long swords and killing those people. And I don't know. I don't feel I get the full experience from that. It can be fun sometimes.
There's two things at play here. I mean, one, you still have Civilization 4, which lets you play the Civilization game that, it sounds to me like that would be the game you prefer, right? But it lets you play more the way you want to play a Civilization game.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, and I think there's a problem with the execution of the AI in Civilization 5, where what Panzer General does, it kind of cheats, right? It lays out a puzzle for you. So the AI doesn't have to work very hard because the way it's positioned creates the challenge for you.
You have the same map, right? Or you have a standard map every time, right?
Right.
Different scenarios.
Right. And so Civilization kind of has to do it on the fly, and it doesn't work quite as well. But what I applaud is the attempt to make warfare more satisfying, more like a war game, because the problem I often had in Civilization 4 is that somebody would declare war on me, and I wasn't excited. I wasn't interested. I wasn't worried. I was annoyed. I was annoyed because I didn't want to deal with this crap. You know, like, I don't want to fend off your stacks. I don't want to have to stop building all this cool stuff that I was in the middle of doing and just start cranking out tanks or whatever it's going to take to fend these guys off. Whereas at least in Civilization 5, it's okay, it's time to fight. Now I need to get my units in the right terrain and defend, you know, choose my objectives. The enemy AI fails to hold up its end of the bargain. But I think if you were to look at it just as gameplay, like say you were up against a good opponent, say you're up against a human, now you've got an interesting game in a way that
I don't think any previous civilization ever was. I don't think they ever really made warfare
true
satisfying, except as a way to basically prove that you'd built the right kind of empire. Because huge hordes of units, all that was a token to prove that, well, you'd won the industrial and science game, mm-hmm. and now you're just going to roll over whoever was dumb enough to challenge you. I think Civilization V kind of fixes that, or at least it's a step toward fixing that. Again, the execution mm-hmm. leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, that's my sentiments exactly, really. Because, as you said, but my feeling in Civ 5 when the AI declare wars on me is the exact same you described in Civ 4. It's like, ugh, I don't want to have to deal with this. Because if I know I'm going to win, pretty much. It requires a lot of either luck or just misclicking on my part for me to actually lose enough units for the AI to be able to take one of my cities. A human player would ever, deal with me. I suppose it would be a good fight, an even fight. But the AI is just so dumb that I'm not challenged. It's, as you say, it's like, oh, again, here they come sailing their units across this small bay, and I have a fleet of submarines parked there. Goodbye. That was a Roman army. It's now sunk into the bottom of the ocean. The hordes of Mongolian spearmen charge my second city, and one spearman and a couple of boat warriors, I fend them off. It's
I kind of feel obligated to defend Civ 5 here a little bit, because there have been a few times. They don't happen. I mean, I wish it was a more regular occurrence. Mm-hmm. But I've definitely had those games where I do get the war I've always dreamed of, right? Where mm-hmm. I am just a few turns away from a space, a few dozen turns really away from a spaceship victory, mm-hmm. and the AI sort of realizes it and then attacks me with everything, and by God, they've actually brought a proper army. We actually have like these brutal fights on the outskirts of major production cities where it's like they're slowly trying to blast me off these hills, and because I've been so pacifist and so science focused, I've got really advanced units, and I've got like three of them to fight the entire war with. And it becomes this cool dynamic of they're trying to you're tough nut to crack. They're trying to break you down, and you're just trying to hold good terrain as they slowly work their way in. And if you can just survive long enough, you can turn the tide. I've had games like that. They are less frequent than I might wish, and I think where I've noticed the biggest problem is if there is water near the battlefield, you can forget about having a good game because the AI has no idea what to make of the ocean.
What is this web thing? I don't get this.
And park themselves there and give you a hard time, but no, they decide, I'm going to go back into the ocean again because I like being on a boat.
Yeah. Okay. The sheer number of times the most powerful land unit on the battlefield just boards the transport to get shot up by a frigate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ghastly. But if you're lucky enough, I guess is the way to put it, if you're lucky enough to share a long land border with a powerful AI, there's a chance of you getting a good game out of it.
Yeah. Well, I realize another, I would say, a flaw in Civ 5's thinking when it comes to their implementation of, because the whole hex tile thing is wonderful. I love that. But it's the size of it. If you play, for example, Panzer General, you have when you invade Russia, right? Russia is like four different maps or something like that. And each of them is the size of one standard map in Civ 5, right? So you have one front the size of a world of Civ covered with land to fight and move your units around in and consider the terrain to use. But in Civ 5, I don't play on bigger than standard because my computer gets, basically a kick in the nuts from it. starts groaning and overheating.
Oh, why did you do this to me?
Yeah, yeah. So I play standard size only. But in that case, most of my fights, I realize there's a one or two tile pass, which I can just hold, and I'm good, right? And then, as you said, I just turn the tide by bringing in stronger units.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-7659.
637 Poly.
In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-Poly.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Record dates assorted 2010 and 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Sound Clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.